Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and welcome to this seminar on motivating salespeople in tough times. This is one of the most important subjects of all for yours and my success. Now, it's interesting, the sales manager is the most important person in any sales-driven organization. Study after study shows that there's nothing that will improve the results of the sales organization better and faster than improving the skills of the sales manager, because the sales manager is a multiplier. Your skills, your ability, your personality is actually multiplied times all the people that you influence. So if you're really up, positive, clear, focused, you have a tremendous positive impact on sales activity and eventually sales. We also know that the sales manager is the pivotal skill. The whole business turns on you. You are what we call the officer corps of the sales organization. You're the ones that determine victory or defeat out there. So there's really no one more important than you, the sales manager. Now, the key role of the sales manager, especially in difficult times, is to be positive and to be upbeat, to be encouraging, to be cheerful. It doesn't take anything to be positive and happy when sales are great. But it's when sales are down and people are discouraged and there's lots of negativity in the marketplace, that's what we call the testing time. This is where you demonstrate what you're really made of. So this is a wonderful time for you to learn and grow and become a better person. Now, let me tell you something philosophically that we've talked about in the past, and it is that your great job in life is to develop character. And character is only developed in the crucible of challenges and difficulties. And the more challenges and difficulties you have and that you respond to, the better you become as a person and for the rest of your life. And you will notice, by the way, if you look back, that sometimes the most difficult and challenging times of your life were the periods of fastest growth. They actually grew you as a person and made you better than you could possibly have been without the difficulties. It's kind of a perverse thing. We avoid difficulty as much as possible, but it's only through difficulty that we grow. So your personal goal is to be successful, to be as successful as you possibly can. And the requirement for you to be successful is for you to make your team successful, for your team to perform at a high level. And the key to that is individual performance, which means that you need to help each person to do well. The results of the manager are the results of the team. The results of the team are the combined results of the individuals. Now, the fact is, based on lots of studies, the average salesperson today is working at about 50% of capacity. Some of them are working much less. That's the average. Some are working at 20% of capacity. They waste an enormous amount of time. And the studies show that the major way that salespeople waste time is, first of all, idle chit-chat and socializing with coworkers. Many salespeople get the idea that the workplace is sort of like an extension of school where you go and play with your friends. So they come to work and they play with their friends and they drink coffee and they chat and they talk about things and go for lunch and go for drinks afterwards and so on. And in between, they make a couple of calls. This is normal and natural. Also, they waste time on personal business, dropping off their dry cleaning, picking up their laundry, surfing the internet, reading the newspaper, and so on. Your job is to get the maximum performance out of your people, which means that you've got to get them to use the very most time possible on sales activities. Now, here's the question. When is a salesperson working? Well, we have what we call the law of three. It says there are just three things that account for 90% of the contribution of a salesperson, and they are prospecting, presenting, and following up and closing sales. Prospecting, finding new qualified people to talk to, presenting, which is persuading them to give you the business, and then following up and closing the sale. And so we say every salesperson wakes up unemployed every morning and remains unemployed until they get face-to-face, ear-to-ear, with someone who can buy within a reasonable period of time. And so keep that in mind, that the only time they're working, they're not working when they're in the office preparing proposals, they're not working when they're in the office surfing the internet, they're not working when they're talking to other people. They're only working when they're ear-to-ear, face-to-face, head-to-head, knee-to-knee, with people who can buy or sell within a reasonable period of time. Now, the biggest breakthrough in understanding performance in people, in understanding motivation, took place in about 1928 in the Hawthorne Electric Plant of the Edison Company. And what they found was that it is the psychological factor. They called this at this time the X factor. Is why is it that certain work groups perform and certain individuals perform at such high levels and the others perform at such low levels? And they tried everything. They looked at the different way that the work was organized, the different workplace features, the different tools, and so on. And they finally found out it was what was going on inside the mind of the salesperson, or in this case, the worker, that determine performance and productivity more than anything else. And they call this the X factor, the psychological factor. And it's how a salesperson feels. It's how they feel. Remember, the person's emotions are the roaring engine. They're the nitrous oxide. They're the driving force of human performance is emotions. It's how they feel about themselves, how they feel about the company, how they feel about the boss, about the sales manager, how they feel about their coworkers. It's all so we say the key to motivation, and this is what changed my life completely some years ago. I just almost fell off my chair when I discovered this. It's the greatest discovery in the last 100 years. The key to motivation is what is called the self-concept. Each person has a self-concept, and this is a bundle of beliefs or ideas that they have about themselves and their world, and this self-concept determines their performance. It determines their thoughts, their feelings, their actions, their reactions. It determines everything. We know that really successful people have a high positive self-concept. They see themselves and think about themselves and feel about themselves like they are really wonderful people, and they can go out and make sales in any market. Low performers, people with feelings of inadequacy, doubt, fear, inferiority, have a low self-concept. So all improvement in performance begins with an improvement in the self-concept. And once you understand that, it's almost like doing psychological surgery. So what we find is the self-concept is made up of three parts. The first part is called the self-ideal. And this is made up of the goals, the dreams, the hopes, the aspirations of the individual. One of the things that's so important with your company is the vision that the company has to be the very best in the industry. People are really inspired by a larger vision, like a bigger vision. That's why it says in the Bible, where there is no vision, the people perish. Where there is a vision, people become excited, people become more determined, people become more committed, people become more persistent, and so on. So this vision, this ideal of the individual is very important. If a person has a vision of themselves as being the best in their field, they will work much harder than a person who has no vision or a very fuzzy vision. And by the way, you can influence this, as you'll see as we go along. The second part of the self-concept is like three wedges in a pie, is the self-image. And this is where you can really have an impact. The self-image is the way a person sees themselves and thinks about themselves and their performance minute by minute, day by day. And we call this the inner mirror. It's almost like, you know, a person going on stage looks at the mirror backstage to make sure that their makeup is correct. A person going out to make a sales call, a person in the office, a person in their lives, keeps looking in the inner mirror to see how they are expected to perform in this situation. And the self-image is so important. It's determined by three things. It's, first of all, determined by the way the person sees himself, accurately or inaccurately. People with a negative self-image see themselves negatively. People with a positive self-image see themselves positively, which you can have an enormous influence on. Now, the second part of the self-image is the way the person is seen by others. The way we see ourselves is greatly influenced by the way we think people see us. If we think people see us as a really valuable, important, admirable, talented person, that really has an impact on us. By the way, this has enormous influence on children. When parents treat their children like they're really outstanding, children just blossom like flowers after a spring rain. And the third part of the self-image is the way the person actually performs. Now, we call this performance-based self-image. When a person performs well, it reinforces their self-image in a positive way. If they perform poorly, it can actually hurt their self-image and set them up to perform poorly the next time. So everything that you can do to improve a person's self-image causes the person to perform better. Now, the third part of the self-concept is the self-esteem. And the self-esteem is what I call the reactor core. We talked about this a minute ago. It's the emotional part of the person and is defined as how much you like yourself. How much you like yourself as a sales professional. How much you like yourself as a person. How much you like yourself as a friend. How much you like yourself as a parent. How much you like yourself as a spouse. How much you like yourself absolutely determines your performance in that area. In psychology, they have an expression called self-efficacy, which means how well you do what you do. And we find that self-efficacy is the flip side of the coin of self-esteem. That means the more you like yourself, the better you do. The better you do, the more you like yourself. The more you like yourself, the better you do. So the very fastest way to improve a person's performance is to improve their self-esteem, is to raise their self-esteem. So the key determinant of motivation, self-esteem, can be defined as how important a person feels he or she really is. So the way that you have an inordinate influence on the people around you is by making them feel important. Everything that you do to make a person feel important, especially with salespeople, but in every part of your life, raises their self-esteem, improves their self-image, and motivates them toward their self-ideal, toward becoming more and more of what they're capable of becoming. Now, as it happens, there are five keys to making people feel important. They're very simple, and they don't cost anything. And they all start with the letter A, so they're easy to remember. The first is called acceptance. Human beings have a deep down need to be accepted unconditionally by others. In fact, much of the problems that we have in life and in sales is from rejection or feelings of rejection or feeling that we are not acceptable the way that we are. So psychologists call this unconditional positive regard. In other words, when you deal with a patient as a psychologist, you treat the patient unconditionally positive. You never criticize, never complain, never pass judgment, never say or do anything that can be negative at all until the patient finally comes to realize that they're okay, that they're totally accepted by the psychotherapist. In running a sales organization, in a way, your salespeople are your children. And in a way, you're a psychologist, you're a business psychologist. And what you need to do is give your people unconditional positive regard as well. That is the starting point. It's basically what turns on the light switch in people. And how do you give unconditional positive regard? Well, you just smile. Smile when you see people. Smile when you see people as though you're glad to see them, as though you're happy that they're there. There's nothing makes a person feel better than to feel welcomed by the person that they look up to. And remember, you know the golden rule, the person who controls the gold makes the rules. People are inordinately influenced by the people who control the gold. People are inordinately influenced by their managers. And when you're positive and you smile and you're happy to see them and you're welcoming to them whenever you talk to them or on the phone, they feel really good about themselves. Whenever you smile at a person, it reinforces their self-image. It makes them feel more attractive, more likable, as better people. It builds their self-esteem. It increases their motivation. So it's very, very important and very simple. And sometimes the sales manager will scowl. And you have to realize there's a rule in sales management that everything counts. Everything counts. Everything you do or say counts. Everything has an influence on other people. You can't afford to let it all hang out. If you're worried, if you're concerned, if you're upset, if there's problems, you can't afford to show this to other people. You always have to be cheerful on the outside, even if you're crying on the inside. So the second key, second A, is appreciation. Appreciation is one of the most powerful of all things that you can give people. And the way you express appreciation is by simply saying, thank you. You say thank you for everything that people do. You say thank you when they come to work. You say thank you when they make a sale. You say thank you when they arrive at the meeting on time. And you always thank people. And the most amazing thing is every time you say thank you to a person, their self-esteem goes up. When you say thank you, their self-image improves. When you say thank you, they feel happier about themselves. And because they feel happier about themselves, because of what you said, they like you more. They respect you more. They're more loyal and devoted and dedicated to you. So saying thank you is very powerful. Now, the third way to build self-esteem, to improve self-image, to make people feel important, is admiration. Abraham Lincoln once said, everybody likes a compliment. And when you compliment people for anything, their self-esteem goes up. You see, people invest an enormous amount of emotion in certain things. And when you compliment, when you recognize those things, they feel really happy about themselves. They glow all over. You can take a person who is negative or unhappy, and with one compliment, they will suddenly blossom. Now, there's three or four areas where you can compliment people on a regular basis. The first has to do with their traits. Now, a person's traits like punctuality. Boy, you're sure punctual. I sure admire your punctuality. I wish I was as punctual as you all the time. Or their persistence, or their determination, or their courage, or their honesty, or their warmth, or their generosity, or their compassion. People are very proud of the traits that they've developed over the course of their lifetimes. And when you acknowledge those traits, people just blossom. A second thing that you can admire is people's dress and grooming. That's a beautiful suit. That's a lovely dress. That's an attractive purse. That is a beautiful brooch. Have you just redone your hair? Your hair looks great. Whatever it happens to be, compliment people on their appearance. And people just love it. They just feel so happy about it. And the third thing you can compliment people on is their achievements, their accomplishments. Geez, I didn't know you graduated from such and such a college. Did you finish that course? Did you read that book? Boy, that took quite a few hours. In other words, when you admire a person's accomplishments, they are motivated to do more of them. But more than that, they like you, they respect you, they become more loyal and dedicated to you and through you to the company and through the company to making more sales. The fourth A is called approval. And this is where we really get into the furnace. The definition of approval is the degree to which a person feels themselves to be praiseworthy. And praiseworthiness is the definition of self-esteem. And when you give approval to people, which is immediate and specific after they've done something, it raises their self-esteem, improves their self-image, and motivates them to do more of it. So the rule is that when a person does something well, immediately give approval. One of the things that Lee Iacocca used to do, and I've learned this from some of the top executives in the country, is they will just jot down a hand note and put it in an envelope, and they'll just say, "Bill, Susan, congratulations, you did a great job. Signed, Lee." And people will carry that note around with them for years. They'll put it away. It'll be in their scrapbook. So sometimes just a little note, leaving a message on their voicemail saying, "You did a great job," a quick email saying, "Congratulations, you did a great job. Keep up the great work." It takes a couple of seconds, but it has a real powerful reinforcing effect on people. By the way, in terms of praise, I was working with a company, and I've worked with several companies that do this. They work as telemarketers. And each time a person makes a sale on the phone, they get to go and ring a bell. And there's a big cowbell, and they go and ring the bell that they made a sale, and it goes ding, 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 and everybody stops and stands up and applauds and cheers. Then they all go back to work. Next person who makes a sale runs over and rings the bell, and then everybody stands up, applauds and cheers, and goes back to work. That sales organization and sales organizations that do that are so motivated, they are wired like electricity, because everybody is getting praised by everybody every time they make a sale. So they are really, really determined to be the one who rings the bell next. So, two quick points with regard to praise, by the way. You need to praise right after a person has done something. If a person makes a sale on the first of the month and you compliment it on the 30th of the month, it has no reinforcing effect. But if the person makes a sale and you call them immediately, call them at home, call them on the weekend, or gets a listing, and you call them and praise them immediately, that has real impact. And be specific. Never say, "Boy, you're doing a great job." Say, "You did an excellent job at that specific task." The more specific your praise, the more motivational it is. Here's another thing we found. The X factor, again, the psychological factor, is that when you praise a person in public, in front of other people, it doubles, triples, five times the impact on their future behavior. So one of the techniques that people use is catch people doing something right and praise people in front of others. So let's say a person comes in and they've just gotten a listing or just gotten a sale. You say, "That's incredible." You pick them up, take them out the hall, take them down the hallway to someone else and say, "Hey, let me tell you what just happened here." And then you praise the person in front of them to the other person. This has an enormous impact on people. An even better way of praising is at a meeting. You say, "Before we start this meeting, I just wanted to tell you what so-and-so accomplished." And you praise them. You pour syrup all over them in front of everybody else. And of course, as you know, the best praisings of all are in front of large groups. The larger the number of people that a person is praised in front of, the more impact it has on them, and they sometimes remember that for weeks, months, even years afterwards. The second part is when you appraise. When you have to give a person feedback with regard to performance that's not satisfactory, you always do it in private, never in front of another person. When you do it in front of another person, it demolishes their self-esteem, it kicks the chair out from under their self-image, and it makes them feel unhappy and discouraged. So if you must give feedback, and I'll show you how to do this in a couple of seconds, always do it privately. Now the fifth key to improving a person's self-image and making them feel important is attention. And attention just means listening. A Harvard study recently said that the characteristic of top leaders is that leaders are listeners. They're not talkers. They are not loudspeakers. They are not making a lot of noise. They are good listeners. And when you listen to people closely, attentively, it makes them feel valuable and important. It raises their self-esteem. It improves their self-image. And the more important you are in the life of the other person, especially as a manager, the more valuable your listening is and the greater impact it has on their subsequent behavior. So there are four key listening skills that you can learn and you can practice until you become really, really good at them. Number one is to listen attentively. When a person talks, listen without interruptions. Lean forward. Face the person. directly and lean into them as though what they're saying is the most fascinating thing you have ever heard. Just lean in attentively. And as Marshall Goldsmith says in his book, Whatever Got You Here Won't Get You There, one of the biggest mistakes that managers make is called adding value. In other words, they jump in and they add their own 2 cents worth when somebody else is speaking. And so his rule is don't add value. In other words, when a person is talking, just listen without adding anything. Just listen to them talk. Now, step two in effective listening is to pause before replying. Pause 3 to 5 seconds or even longer. Allow silence in the conversation. Resist the urge to jump in with your own 2 cents worth and just pause and reflect on what the person has said. This tells the other person that what they said was important, that you're paying attention to them, that they are valuable and important, even though you could be doing your grocery list while you're pausing. But the main thing is that people feel that what I said was so important that he or she is listening to me and thinking it over. Now, the third key to effective listening is to question for clarification. Never assume that you know what the other person really means by what they said. Instead, ask the question, how do you mean exactly? Or how would you do that? Or where would you go from there? Or obviously you have a good reason for saying that. Do you mind if I ask what it is? So instead of jumping in, ask a question. And the very best question for controlling the conversation in a positive way is just, how do you mean exactly? How do you mean? And remember, in conversation, the person who asks questions has control. The person who's answering the questions is controlled by the other. The fastest way for you to take control of any conversation is simply to ask a question and listen quietly, attentively to the answer. Now, the fourth key to effective listening is to feed it back in your own words. Say, well, let me make sure I understand what you're saying, or is this what you mean? And repeat it back in your own words. This is called the acid test of listening. This is where you prove that you weren't like one of those little dogs in the back of the car with the bobbing head, that you were really listening. You feed it back. And when you feed it back to the person, and the person says, yes, that's my concern, that's what I was saying, that's what I was trying to get across, they feel happy. They feel validated. Their self-image improves. Their self-esteem goes up. They like themselves more, and they like you more. Now, here's the final point, and it's really important. I used to be really kind of short-tempered when my sales staff wanted to talk to me because they always had ideas that involved time and money, usually mine or the company's. And so I would not want to talk to them, or I would contradict them, or I'd say, no, we can't do that. We can't afford that. But what I found is this. You don't have to take action on their ideas. You just have to listen. And when they say, we should do this and we should do that, and why don't we do this and why don't we do that, and why don't we advertise here and so on, you say, you know, that's a very good idea. Let me think about that for a while. That's an interesting concept. I'm glad you brought that to my attention. You just acknowledge the idea, and then you don't have to do anything. And they walk away, and they'll forget about it. It doesn't matter whether you do anything or not. You don't even have to refer to it again. You just get on with the rest of your life. But you don't have. Now, this brings us to something that I developed. It's called the interactive model of motivation. The interactive model of motivation is to imagine that meeting point between you and one of your staff. The point where you, the sales manager, meets with the salesperson is the critical determinant of that salesperson's performance. It's where you meet, where you greet, where you exchange ideas, solve problems, share news, and so on. That moment of contact, like that electrical contact between you and the salesperson, is the most important contact point in determining the performance of that salesperson. And so one of the things we know is that your job is to make sure that every time you interact, you smile, you greet, you thank people, you praise, you encourage, you recognize, you admire people and so on, you listen attentively. Every time you have a moment of contact, we call this a moment of truth with the salesperson. And everything counts. Every moment of truth counts in moving that salesperson's performance either up or down, either encouraging or discouraging that person. Now, they've done some surveys with regard to this interactive model, and what they found is the number one reason that the salesperson takes the job is because of the sales manager. The number one reason that the person stays at the job is because of the sales manager and the way the sales manager treats him or her. The number one reason the person leaves the job is because of the sales manager. And so you are the most important person, as we said before. The quality of the relationship between you and the salesperson is the critical determinant of performance. And your job is to do everything possible to make sure that it's a great relationship. Now, there's a book that comes out every couple of years, and it's called The Best Companies to Work For, or The 100 Best Companies in America, and so on. And there's a concept called a great place to work. And the question is, what is a great place to work? And they've done all kinds of surveys. Thousands of employees have been asked in the best companies, what makes this a great place to work? And what they found is the answers are often different from what managers thought. The most important thing of all, number one, is that there's a high trust level between the employed and the employer, between the manager and the salesperson. The salesperson absolutely trusts the manager. That means the manager always tells the truth, always follows through on his or her commitments, and is absolutely trustworthy. My friend Stephen Covey says the key to being trusted is to be trustworthy, and that means 100% of the time. And the key to measuring trust between the manager and the salesperson is two or three things. Number one, the salesperson feels free to make mistakes without being beaten up, criticized, dumped on. The person feels free to make a mistake without their self-esteem being attacked. A second thing is the salesperson feels comfortable expressing themselves openly and honestly with the manager. In fact, what you found is the very best companies, people feel very free to express themselves, argue, disagree, challenge, and everything else, respectfully, of course, but they feel quite comfortable speaking out openly and honestly with their manager because they have no fear that they're going to be punished, criticized, or embarrassed in front of others. Another factor is that they feel that they're in the know. And those are the three critical things. High trust level, they feel that they can speak honestly to their manager, and they feel they're in the know because their manager always tells them what's going on, always lets them know. They don't have to rely on rumors. The manager, as they say, beats the news home. If something is happening, they'll know it right away because the manager will tell them. So being in the know is what is considered to be a great place to work. The person knows. So coming to performance problems, we find there's two major areas of performance problems. One is called a lack of motivation. The person is not motivated to perform. The second is a lack of competence. The person is not capable of performing. Now, let me talk about these both for a second. Lack of motivation often comes from a person's background. They had a difficult childhood, they had bad relationships, they have an inferiority complex, they have a negative self-image, and so on. One of the things you have to realize is that people don't change. Is you can't take a person who is negative and down on themselves and turn them around. You are not a qualified psychotherapist, you do not have the skills, and it only leads to frustration on your part. Now, I say this with all respect because my daughter is a psychologist, my wife is a psychologist, is that women often have a tendency to become mother confessors to their staff. They feel compassion for staff members who are unhappy or having problems or difficulties. But what we find is that this is a bottomless pit because the more sympathy and compassion you express to salespeople who are having problems, the more they come to you with more problems until you find you're spending, as many sales managers have told me, spending all day being a psychotherapist, all day counseling people, and people just come in and all day they want to talk about their problems, which are reasons for not going out and making sales. So the rule is simply this. Some people are not motivated, and they never will be, and you're not going to motivate them. The key to success is for you to find positive people and channel their energies in a positive direction. But if they don't have the motivation, don't think that you're going to motivate them. Now, there is one other factor with regard to motivation. Many sales managers think that people should just know how to sell. So they give them cursory training. When I got my real estate license, for example, and my investor's license and all the other licenses, all I got was product knowledge. All I got was legal knowledge. All I got was transactional knowledge. I did not get a word of training on how to sell. And they say, okay, you're qualified, go out there and make sales, call people. So sometimes one of the reasons that people aren't motivated is because they're not trained. At a recent meeting, I was approached by a gentleman who told me that my program had saved one of his friend's life. And I said, really? He said, yes. He said, I had a guy who was in a sales slump. He'd been at the top of his organization, been a slump for 2 years. He was thinking of quitting. He was depressed. He was starting to drink. And he asked him, have you listened to Brian's program, Psychology of Selling? And he said, yeah, I listened to it a long time ago. He said, well, what effect did it have? He said, well, it helped me. I mean, became top salesman. He said, why don't you listen to it again? He said, well, I hadn't even thought about that. He said, I'll get it for you. He got him the CD version. He listened to it again. And 2 weeks later, he came back and he was a transformed person. He was on fire. Within a month, he was back up to the top three in his sales force. Within 2 months, he was number two. Within 3 months, he was number one. His income went up. It just literally just jumped up like a gymnast flipping. He said, transformed his life. He lost the weight, quit drinking. He got back with his wife. I mean, he says, unbelievable. He had forgotten the basic skills. So sometimes the reason people aren't motivated is they're not properly trained in how to perform at the job. Please understand that one of the keys that turns people around, and I've seen this happen tens of thousands of times, is learning new skills. Often a person is not motivated because they just simply don't know how to do it. As a result, they do it poorly. When they do it poorly, their self-esteem takes a hit. They feel like they're no good. Their self-image takes a hit. They feel negative about themselves. So sometimes you can turn people around by getting them the proper training. The second demotivator is lack of competence. The person's not good at what they do, which we just talked about. Now, the way that you can tell if it's lack of motivation or lack of competence is simply by asking this question. Could this person do this job if their life depended upon it? If this person had a gun at their head, could they go out there and call on customers and take listings and do showings and make sales? If they had a gun to their head. If they could, and they're not doing it, then they're not motivated. If they couldn't do it, even if their life depended upon it, it means that they're not competent. And it's very important to understand those two. Now, there are four company-created problems that lead to low motivation. And you must be aware of these. It's sort of like vitamin deficiencies in the body that leads to fatigue and poor health. Number one is lack of direction. The sales manager is not giving the individual salespeople clear goals, clear standards, and clear measures. It's very important, and you must never take this for granted. A lot of sales managers think, well, people should know what they're supposed to do. No, sometimes people need to be taken by the hand and walked through exactly what they're supposed to do. Now, the second company-created problem is lack of feedback. My friend Ken Blanchard says that feedback is the breakfast of champions. People need regular feedback. Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi of the University of Chicago, who wrote the book Optimal Performance, said that one of the characteristics of top performers is regular feedback, is they're constantly getting feedback on their performance from the people who know what's going on. Their manager is always giving them positive feedback, which reinforces them and builds them up. Now, the third demotivator that managers often create is lack of recognition, especially for excellent performance. And this is important because if a person really works hard and makes a sale, gets a listing, brings home the bacon, if you like, and you say, you know, thanks a lot, put it over there and get it processed, and they're not recognized for the extra effort they put in, they're a little bit demotivated. And even though they're happy for the money, it kind of takes the joy out of it if they don't get the bell rung, if you like. So recognition is really important. And the rule is whatever gets recognized gets repeated. Whatever gets recognized and appraised and approved of gets repeated. So if you want somebody to repeat a behavior, make a big thing of it. Ring the bell. Be a cheerleader. But number four is lack of rewards. If people don't get rewards, people feel undervalued. And feeling undervalued means they feel unimportant. Now, of course, they get the rewards of the financial results of their sales, but there are other rewards that are important, and we'll talk about those in a couple of seconds. Now, one of the great motivators as a sales manager is what I call the friendship factor. Now, the friendship factor, again, is based on all kinds of research, but basically what it says is that the very best managers are seen by their people as friends. He or she is my friend. I like him or her as a person. You know, in relationships, it's important to be in love, but it's also important to be in like. One of the most important things in a relationship is that you genuinely like the other person. And in a sales relationship between the sales manager and the salesperson, it's really important that the other person genuinely likes you. And so we find that there are three factors that increase this friendship factor, which is the key to high performance. Number one is consideration. And again, it's based on lots of research, is consideration by the sales manager of the salesperson. And this is defined by the salesperson as he or she cares about me as a person as well as a salesperson. He or she cares about my personal life. He or she cares about my family. He or she cares about my health and so on. So that's why when you see someone and you say, geez, have you changed your hair? It really looks great. Or have you lost weight? They say that in America, the one compliment that you can always give without any fear of contradiction is saying, geez, you look like you've lost weight. And people always beam. I mean, even if they haven't, they beam because everybody likes to think that they look thin. You know, the old saying, you can never be too thin or too rich. So consideration of the person as a person, in addition to the person as a salesperson, is a key part of the friendship factor. The second C is courtesy. And this is really important. That means be polite. Be respectful. Say please to people. I always make a habit when I work with my staff of always saying, please, would you do this? And I always say thank you. Could you please handle this? Could you please take care of this? And I remember a woman coming up to me at a seminar. She's saying, you know, we work for a terrible boss. She had two of her coworkers there. Yes, he always criticizes, always dumps on us. He never gives us any praise or encouragement at all. And not long ago, she went to him and she said, "Why is it that you never say anything nice to us? You're always criticizing." And his answer was, "My job is to criticize you and dump on you if you make mistakes. Your job is to do the job right. And if you do the job right, I don't need to comment." And the reason I mention that is there's a lot of people who slip into that way of thinking unconsciously. That, you know, my job is to straighten you out if you make mistakes, but if you do things right, well, that's what you're supposed to do. Well, in reality, being polite to people, being respectful, asking them to do things, saying please, treating them as if they're valuable and important people doesn't cost you anything, but it improves their self-image, raises their self-esteem, moves them toward their self-ideal, makes them happy, makes them feel good about working with you, and it's a key to creating a great place to work. And the third C in the friendship factor, consideration, courtesy, and the third C is caring. And caring means sensitivity to the problems or concerns of the salesperson. Now, sensitivity goes back to our listening skills. When a person has a problem, a difficulty that's causing them some emotional stress, sensitivity means that you basically stop and listen really closely. Don't interrupt. Just express compassion. You don't have to say anything. You can say that, "I'm sorry to hear that. That's too bad, that's awful, that's terrible," and so on. But what you do is just simply be a sounding board. In psychology, they have an expression called listening to help. And listening to help means sometimes people just need to express their problem to somebody that they like and respect. And all that person has to do is listen in order to help them out. You don't have to comment, you don't have to give advice, you don't have to do anything. And by the way, with regard to advice, one quick aside. Sometimes we as managers, because we're more experienced and knowledgeable, have a tendency to give advice to people who have an apparent need for it. But there's a rule that says never give advice because the propensity to ignore advice is universal. In other words, people are going to ignore the advice anyway. So when a person comes to you and says, "What should I do here and there?" always use this question. Say, "What do you think you should do? What do you think you should do?" And in 90% of cases, that person's already thought about what to do. Maybe 100% of cases. With women, it's 100% of the time. They know what they're going to do. So you'd simply say, "What do you think you should do?" And they say, "Well, I think I should do this or that." And you say, "Well, that's a good idea. Why don't you give it a try?" And you stay out of the loop. Because if you give advice, the rule is, and it goes back to one of the great rules of power, is when you give advice in an area, you must always give advice in an area. If you give advice to a person, then you're on the hook if it works or not. But if you turn it around and you say, "What do you think you should do?" it forces the person to think it through themselves, and it keeps you out of the decision loop, which is really important. Now, another motivational technique is called golden rule management. And you know this, all good managers do, but golden rule management means to manage others the way you would like to be managed if the situation was reversed. In General Electric, one of the ways they teach golden rule management is they say, manage another person as though that person was going to be your manager a year from now and you would be reporting to them, because that is very often the case. And it's quite amazing in life how people change positions with changed responsibility. My son joined a sales organization and he worked under a sales supervisor, and the sales supervisor worked at half speed and my son worked at 100%, and he outperformed his sales supervisor. Within 3 months, the supervisor was working for him. And this happens all the time. So always treat people the way you'd like to be treated if the situation was reversed. Always treat them with courtesy, kindness, respect, ask for their advice. Treat them very nicely, as if you would be answering to them in the near future. Now, with regard to performance appraisal, another motivational factor is that sometimes people drop the ball. Sometimes people are not performing the way they are supposed to. One of the reasons you're the manager is you've got to help people stay straight. You don't dump on them, you don't fire them, but remember, the reason for performance appraisal is to improve performance. Let me say that again. The reason for performance appraisal, if a person is not doing the job the way they're supposed to, is to improve their performance, not to dump on them. You see, we've been brought up believing that the job of the manager, the parent, is to dump on them, to punish them, to criticize them, to knock them down a notch, to make them feel bad about themselves and not doing the job. No, 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 no. One of the most harmful of all factors in human life is destructive criticism. So the only way that you can be sure of improving the performance of a person is that after the performance approval discussion, their self-esteem is higher than it was before. So remember, your job is to build and reinforce their self-esteem and their self-confidence in the course of talking to them. So how do you do that? Well, it's very simple. First of all, you bring the performance issue to the employee's attention. You don't say you did or you didn't. You say, I am concerned about the way this job is going. Talk about it in kind of an objective way and express your personal concerns, but never attack the person. Always talk about the performance, not the person. Always talk about the job, the number of calls that are being made, the number of presentations that are being made. Always talk about it objectively, because then people don't feel defensive, they don't feel angry, they don't feel under attack. The second thing is to agree on what is to change and by how much. In order for this job to be done properly, a person has to make this number of calls each day, this number of reports, this number of presentations, and so on. In other words, talk about what needs to be done and say, don't you agree? And get the person to agree. And then finally, and this is really important, focus on the future. When you focus on the future, the person does not feel defensive. When you focus on the future, the person feels positive about your advice. And how do you focus on the future? You use three sets of magic words. The first is, next time this happens, why don't you do this? Next time, why don't you do this? The second magic words are, from now on, why don't you do this every day? From now on, I'd like you to do this. From now on, the best strategy would be for you to do this. And then the third set of magic words are, in the future, do it this way. In the future, try this. In the future, I would like you to. You see, when you attack people for what they've done or not done in the past, they automatically go into a defensive mode, their self-esteem goes down, their self-image is negatively affected, and they basically go into fetal crouch, if you like a porcupine's all spines coming up, and they become defensive and angry. But when you talk about next time, in the future, from now on, people are open, and they lean forward, and they listen, and they take your advice. Now, at Harvard University some years ago, a professor named Leon Festinger did some work which has really kind of transformed me. He called it social comparison theory. And social comparison theory discovered basically that people are always comparing themselves with others, but they don't compare themselves with Bill Gates or Michael Jordan. They compare themselves with people who are very close to them. They compare themselves with people who are immediately above them or immediately below them. They compare themselves with their immediate social or business circle, and they compare how they're doing against them. And social comparison theory says that you can, by understanding this, dramatically motivate people. Because people have two needs in the sales force. Number one is what we call autonomy needs, is each person needs to stand out as an individual, to feel special as an individual. And especially salespeople, especially Americans, we like to stand out. We like the individual winner, if you like. The second set of needs that each person has in the workplace are called dependency needs, and that is a need to be part of a group. It's a need to be part of the team. It's a need to be accepted and appreciated. It's called by Abraham Maslow, it's called a belongingness need. We need to belong. We need to, you know, like the boll weevil is looking for a home. We've got to have a home. When we come into that office, we want to feel that we belong here. We're part of a bigger team. And that loyalty to the larger organization is very powerful in motivating people and in causing them to persist when they're out there as lone rangers in the field. So one of the ways that you can tap into both of these needs, especially with social comparison theory, is to post everyone's sales results on the board every week. I worked with a sales organization where the people were all over the place and there was a lot of demotivation, and the sales guys that started the company were not great managers. They didn't know very much. So I helped them to put up a big board on the wall, and on the board on the wall, every week it was revised, and the person who was the top salesperson of the week had their name and their number of calls, their number of sales, number of revenues generated across the top, number two, number three, number four. They had something like 30 people, and the board was the big board in the main wall in their meeting room. And so everybody came in every week and rushed to the board to see what they were doing. Now, here's what happened. When they saw the board, they would see where they were relative to the others. The number one person was really happy to be there, but the number two person said, hey, I almost became number one. And so number two was motivated to work a little bit harder to knock off number one. Number one was motivated to not let number two knock him off. Number three went after number two. Number four went after number three. And all the way down to the bottom, to number 32, number 32 was determined, I'm not going to come in here again and have my name at the bottom. So number 32 went after number 31, social comparison theory. In other words, we compete with people who are very close to us. What happened was it created, almost like a volcano erupts from deep in the earth, it created this upward pressure in the sales force. Every single person wanted to move up at least one place on that board every single week. And so the sales manager didn't have to do anything but post the numbers. And it was absolutely amazing. Now, a second thing you can do is you can circulate results on a monthly basis. Have them all typed out and hand it out to everybody. John Wooden, the basketball coach, was very famous for his method of being an outstanding coach and motivating people to more championships than anybody alive. What he would do is he would take game films of the players, and then he would sit with them and they'd just play the films. And he wouldn't comment. He wouldn't say, see where you made a mistake, drop the ball, you know, so on. He would just play the game films with the players and say, what do you think of that? And they would look at the game film and they'd look at the coach and the coach would look at them and he never said a word. He said, uh-huh, I see. And the players would go away and they'd correct their mistakes. He never had to correct them. He never criticized them or faulted them because he knew that athletes were really hyper-emotional, very sensitive, just like salespeople. What he would do is he would just show them their results. And it's the same thing with you. When you pass out a list and you show everybody's sales results, people look at those results. You don't have to say anything, but it has a tremendous motivational power because people are inordinately influenced by the performance of their peers. People compete with their peers. They compare themselves with their peers. So it's very, very important. And you can do it on the board. You can circulate results monthly in written form. You can send them out by email. You can do this by offices and so on. And everybody who gets those because of this natural competitiveness starts to strive to improve. Now, there's another motivational factor. It's called participative management. It's really the key to individual building, and it's the key to team building. What it means is very simply this, is that you talk over what's going on with individuals. You have them comment. You have them share their ideas with you. You hold meetings on a regular basis. One of the most important things you do as a manager is you hold a sales meeting every single week. And it's a command performance. Everybody has to be there. You hold it at 8 o'clock, and it's not 8:01, and everybody's at the meeting. And then you have an agenda. And with the agenda, you have everybody's name on the agenda. And what you do is you go around the room, and every single person reports on their activities. And basically the question is, how's it going? How is it out there? And what they'll do is they'll say, well, doing this, I'm working on that, and so on. So everybody knows what everybody else is doing, and it's very non-threatening. A person can answer the question in depth, or a person can answer the question shallowly, and you go right around the room and let each person report. What happens is this synergy of everybody reporting, eyeball to eyeball, seeing everybody else, builds this feeling of belongingness, builds this feeling of motivation, builds the feeling of being part of a team and knowing what everybody else is doing, being in the know, if you like. Now, what I do is put every single person's name in my company on the agenda, and that is the meeting. And then I come in last, and I will give, you know, news about the company and what's going on and so on. Now, the manager's job in opening the meeting is to comment and then to compliment. One of the great ways to open a meeting is saying, before we begin and start off, I would like to lead a round of applause for so-and-so who just accomplished this sale, and tell what it is, and then have everybody applaud. There's nothing that gets a meeting started off more positively than for everybody to applaud the success of one of the people who are there. And you may applaud the success of two or three or four or five people. It doesn't matter. Remember, public applause has an enormous, overwhelming emotional effect on people. They get red, they get flustered, they feel happy, they call home and tell other people. It's just a wonderful thing to do. Now, here's another thing that you can do is you can have the top salesperson chair the meeting, or you can have your office manager chair the meeting. In other words, what I do is I revolve the chairmanship of the meeting and have a different staff member chair it each time. And sometimes the secretary, the receptionist, chairs the meeting, and it's highly motivational. And you will be surprised at how good they are at it. The agenda is the same. It's the list of everybody who's on there once a week, same time. And what they do is they just call them out and they move the meeting on. Okay, let's go on to the next issue and so on. Very, very powerful motivator. When you come on, you discuss the situation, you give the news, you ask for input for everybody. And remember this, there's a direct relationship, one-to-one, between the amount that a person gets to discuss their work and how committed they are to doing it well. If you tell a person they have certain goals and quotas, they have minor commitment to it because it's your goal or quota. If you discuss it with them and get them involved, then they get even more motivated. Now, we say that the next part of motivating salespeople is to always be a cheerleader. We call it manager as motivator. And there are three key things to being a cheerleader. Number one is clear expectations. It is the number one motivator in work is people feel that they know exactly what their boss wants them to do. Reverse is the number one demotivator in work is that people are not sure what their boss wants them to do. So you've got to make it absolutely crystal clear, because if you want people to be winners, you have to allow them to win. The only way they can win is knowing the target that they're supposed to hit. They've got to know what you want them to do. If you tell them clearly what you want them to do, now they know what they need to do to win. So that you are really helping people by making it really clear to them how many calls they're supposed to make, how many people they're supposed to see, what their sales goals are for the week and the month and so on. Second of all is positive expectations. Positive expectations in motivation means always tell people you can do it. I believe in you. You have the capacity to be one of the best people. I remember Zig Ziglar, great guy, talks and he says, the turning point in his life when he was a junior salesman was when the top salesman of the company took him aside and said, Zig, you can be a great one. You can be one of the greats. He said he never forgot that all his life. He'd been an average salesperson. From then on, he was on fire. He broke every sales record in his company for 7 years because one person said, you can be great. You can be one of the great ones in this business. And he had never thought of that before. So when you tell people, you can be great, you're good, you can do it, it has an enormous impact on people. And finally, give them constant praise and encouragement. Catch them doing something right. Boy, that's a great job. Always be upbeat. Now, salespeople's biggest motivators, based on all of the interviews, are, first of all, money. Salespeople are more motivated by money than anything else. If you ask them, do you want the money or a trip? Do you want the money or a new car? Do you want the money or a vacation? They want the money. So money is the number one motivator of salespeople. But number two, and this is very important, is status. Salespeople are highly motivated by status and recognition, what we call ego rewards. It's very close behind the money. And so we know that salespeople, because of the very nature of the business, have what is called, in psychology, insecurity of status. In other words, they never feel safe. No matter how much they accomplish, they're a little bit uneasy. They feel that they might all be taken away from them. We all have this, by the way. If we start from humble beginnings, we all have this insecurity of status. I might lose it all. And so no matter how successful we are, we always feel like we're on the razor's edge. And we need somebody to constantly be recognizing our status, to be constantly boosting us up. So there's five requirements for maximum motivation based on all of the studies. Number one is goals. People need clear sales and activity targets. I cannot overemphasize the importance of people writing down goals and making plans for their accomplishment and setting priorities and then working on their goals every single day. If you can get your people working on goals, the people working on goals will outperform the non-goal setters by 5 and 10 times. The second is standards and measures. The rule is what gets measured gets done. People need to know the targets you're aiming at, the number, the volume, the size, the dollars. They've got to have clear targets. The third motivator is success experiences. A person has to feel that they have accomplished something. And so your job is to acknowledge both small and large successes. And here's the key, acknowledge and praise activities, in other words, the number of calls that a person makes, as well as the number of sales. Praise every single thing that a person does that contributes to the sales result. That motivates them to do more of it. The fourth standard motivator is recognition of success. Recognition by yourself, by others, praise, encouragement, public acknowledgement, and so on. And then the fifth is rewards. And rewards can be tangible, as we talked about, money, gifts, dinner certificates, things that a person can touch, taste, feel. I remember when IBM was building their organization into the best sales organization in the world, when a salesman made a great sale, they would send a dozen roses home to his wife, along with a gift certificate for a dinner at one of the best restaurants in town. And he'd arrive home, and she was there, and she'd received the dozen roses and the gift certificate. And I'll tell you what, she was so happy, and he was happy, she was happy. And he went out the next day, and he would just literally kill to win those prizes again. They knew how to motivate their salespeople. Now, the second type of rewards are intangible rewards. And these are really important. They're status rewards. They're ego rewards that you can give that cost very little but have an enormous emotional impact on people. The first is the simplest of all. It's time with the manager. your time devoted face-to-face with a salesperson is very valued in your organization. That's why you must never spend a lot of time with poor performers, because you just encourage them to continue to be poor performers. When you spend a lot of time with poor performers, you deprive, like oxygen, your top performers of the time and attention they want and expect from you for being good performers. So having coffee with a top performer is a real reward. I worked with a company, and I remember the sales people told me that the sales manager had a game, a contest. Every month, the salesperson who was the top salesperson got taken out for lunch the first Wednesday of the following month by the sales manager. And salespeople would work and work, and in the last 5 days of the month, they would be clawing all over each other to be number one. So they got taken out for a $10 lunch. So sometimes just offering to take the top person out for lunch the first Wednesday of the following month is a real motivator. People just love it. And you say, well, we're all going for lunch now. Make a big deal. You're taking the person out for lunch. What does it cost? It costs very little, but wow, does it have an impact? And the next month, that person wants to be taken out for lunch again, and everybody else, social comparison theory, wants to knock them off and be the one taken out. The second type of intangible motivation is giving the person an office. The top performers in the best organizations I know eventually get their own office. It doesn't even have to be a big office, but they're not sitting in the pool. It can be a desk, and sometimes it can even be a bigger desk. In some companies, they are so religious, they have codes for what size of desk a person can have at their position. And an executive is not even allowed to buy their own desk if it's larger than what the company has prescribed for that position. And a third motivation that I've seen is the window. I worked with a sales organization that had the whole floor, and they had rows of desks, and all the desks were from the elevator core all the way to the window. And they kept changing. Every single month, a person was changed in the order of desks depending upon their sales results, and the highest level was the desk next to the window. And so they kept organizing, bumping, and people would strive and struggle to be the one that had the desk next to the window. And once they had it, they would work hard not to lose their desk, because it would be a real embarrassment. I worked with one company that had a statue, and the statue was a cheap statue bought from one of the mail houses that said top salesperson, and had a person with a big arrogant smile on their face, or just a little plaster statue, and whoever was the top salesperson, that sat on their desk all month. And people would kill to have that on their desk. It was the most amazing darn thing. So another intangible motivator is time off. Giving people time off for a vacation, giving people a day off, is a real motivator, because it enables them to, you know, spend time in their personal lives. Another motivator is additional responsibilities. Top people love to be given responsibilities. Ask them to do things, because they're the top person. You need them to help you in this area. Another motivator is additional training and development. The best companies will actually reward people by sending them to training programs. People love to go to training programs because they can associate the training program with increased income. I worked with a company once, an American Express division, that hired people, gave them basic training, and only after 1 year did they give them real sales training. And people had to survive and thrive within a year. Then they got first-class training. Sometimes when a person performs well, you give them a trip to a major conference or take them with you to a conference. It's an intangible, but it's a reward that people remember a long time. Okay, finally, the last keys to building a top sales team. Number one, there's three. Number one is proper selection. Remember I told you that there's the law of three that determines 90% of your success? Well, the three for sales management are simple. Number one is proper selection. 95% of your success will be determined by the quality of the people that you choose to work for you in the first place. Number two is proper training. Training them in every aspect. You would never expect a carpenter to carpent, if you like, to work with wood without training. Wouldn't expect a piano player to work without training. You can't expect a sales professional to work without complete training. The rule is you should never ask a person to do anything for which you have not thoroughly trained them and then gone out with them and validated that they have mastered the skill. Sometimes people are only one skill away from being superstars. And the third key to sales management is proper management and motivation, as we've been talking about throughout. Now here's a key. Give yourself a grade of 1 to 10 in each area. How good are you or have you been in selecting people? Scale of 1 to 10. How good are you or have you been in training your people? Scale of 1 to 10. How good are you in management and motivation? Scale of 1 to 10. And wherever you give yourself the lowest grade, that's your biggest problem right now. That's the area that you have to work on. So let me wrap up with the five basics of motivation never change in any field, but especially in sales management. Number one, set clear goals, standards, and measures, and have each person know what they are and write them down and work on them every day. Number two, inspect what you expect. Keep checking. How's it going? Have meetings every week. Have people report on their activities. Don't have people rambling around like billiard balls bouncing around the table. Make sure that people are checked on, touch base with them, ask them how they're doing, how can you help them, and so on. You can't expect them to do it unless you inspect it. Number three is give continuous feedback and encouragement. Constantly tell people how good they are. Tell people how good they can be. Tell people that even if times are tough, we will weather this, and when the going gets tough, the tough get going, and what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, and that sort of thing. Number four, perhaps the most important of all, is to be a role model to your staff. Imagine that everybody is looking at you and they're going to duplicate your behavior. So be a role model. Be the kind of person that everyone can look up to and respect and admire and like and can brag about and be happy that they're working for you because you're such an excellent person. And number five, which ties into number four, is never stop learning and growing yourself. Never stop getting better. Never stop upgrading your skills. Listen to audio programs, read books, attend courses, take every training program that the company offers you. Be an example to others of the importance of continuous personal and professional development. So let me wrap up by saying this, is that you are the most important people in your organization. That your training and the way that you teach people and treat people is going to have the greatest single impact on their performance. And the better you get, the better your entire sales organization gets. The better you get, the higher will be the sales of your team. The better you get, the better the company will be. The better you get, the better will be your entire future. Thank you for listening. Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.